I'd like to begin our regular session of the city council agenda, or city council meeting of February 21st, 2023. I'm Mayor Horrox, and all of council is present, and we'll begin with a thought and or prayer and pledge of allegiance by Councilmember Van Langeveld.
Thank you. I've invited Janet Welch from the Health and Wellness Committee to share a prayer or thought with us today.
Thank you. A friend of mine shared this quote with me just a few days ago, and I thought it was really appropriate for this venue. It is from former President Jimmy Carter, who's been in the news in the last few days. He said, "Earlier in my life, I thought the things that mattered were the things that you could see, like your car, your house, your wealth, your property, your office. But as I've grown older, I've become convinced that the things that matter most are the things you can't see, the love you share with others, your inner purpose, your comfort with who you are. And I would add, and the service that you give to your community." And I think that the service we give not only helps our community, but also brings us joy. Our dear Heavenly Father, we're very grateful at this time for the opportunity that we have to come and discuss community issues and the ways in which that we all can better our communities and be of service to others. We ask that as this council discusses and makes decisions on behalf of the people of this city, that they will be mindful of the specific needs of those who are vulnerable, and that they may be thoughtful and mindful in their deliberations. We ask that the Spirit might dwell here, and we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Janet. And I've been happy to witness your spirit of service. We're benefiting from that. And then Corey from our committee, our chair, will lead us in our pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you to all three of you. Next item is citizen comment. If there are any citizens that would like to address the council, please come forward, state your name and address. And should point out that there's nothing, if it's not on the agenda, we can't act on anything, but we're happy to hear from anyone that's here. Zoning change.
Will you allow comments when that comes? Or do I need to give a comment then?
Why don't you come give it now?
We've got it for later here. That's Joy. That's Joy on it. Okay.
My name is Joellen Ashworth. I live at one end of 850 West. I've written you all letters, and so you know what my position is on that. That really, we can't have more multiple housing units there on that street. And my question is, and I emailed this to you too, what's North Salt Lake's, or what's the Planning Commission's plan? What is your plan? You know, our neighborhood has existed, Area B has existed for a long time, and we're a neighborhood. And you're coming in and, you know, you have your goals. And at the end I put, do you want us to be a smart city? Are you trying to take away our cars? I did look at the parking requirements for multiple dwellings. And it's ridiculous. Nobody has a car and a half. Everybody has two cars. Some people have three cars. And I commented about the parking in my circle. People come and park in my circle because there's not enough parking where they live, you know, because you allowed them to have such little parking there that they have to find somewhere else to park. But I'm really opposed to this. You know what I think, and I hope it matters to you. I will say one thing, and I might have put it in my note to you, but on the packet tonight, there's no place for you to say disapproved. There's only approved and a place for your signature. So it looks to me like this is a done deal. If you didn't mean it to be that way, you need at least to give the appearance that the disapproval is a possibility.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Just to speak to that, yeah, it's set up to approve. So if we don't approve it, it doesn't get signed. And that's the way we do all our business here. Any other citizen comments?
Dee Lawless. I have two things. Number one is, I talked to Ken about a little bit earlier. Last summer we changed the water structure of billing, that we have a $20 base fee, and then we charge so much for the next, we have three tiers there. The bill comes out and it says water, $25, $50, $40, and 32 cents. It doesn't really break it down. And as I was talking to Ken, a lot of the other utilities, the power company a few years ago changed theirs, so now they have a base fee. They have a tier one, they have a tier two, and a tier three. And I think that it would be very advantageous, instead of just putting out one number that says this is what the water bill is, to put out base charge $20, tier one, so many gallons at $1.25 per thousand or whatever, tier two, which is the next one up, and tier three. I think that as people looked at that, they would say, gee, I've got so many gallons that are going into tier three. I think if I just don't flush the toilet once a day, that might bring it down to where I can eliminate that amount of extra charge on there. I think that changing it to have a base fee and not have a free 8,000 gallons of water that went through it that didn't really encourage conservation. I think that by breaking it down and putting it on the bill, like the power company does, and because everything else is there except for those two items, and I know they're calculated because that's how they get the total. Yeah. And I think it would be a fairly easy thing to break that out into four line items, or two or three, whatever is necessary, so that those people looking at it would say, oh yeah, I'm doing that. The second item has to do with some of the other stuff you've been talking about, which also includes the water. I've had a conversation with some of the new people that have been annexed into the city and others that say, oh yeah, well they're gonna raise this price over here so they can do this over here, and they're not gonna use the price there. I know that we have restricted funds. I know that some of the, like the water bills coming in, cannot be used to pave roads. And so we do have restricted areas, and I don't know how difficult it would be to create a report that says, here's a pie chart and this is where our funds are, the 8 or 12 whatever standard distribution funds are. This is where the money comes into those, and maybe some of that money goes into two or three places. I had a video from Todd Weiler today, and he was explaining the problem with eliminating sales tax on food. And because of restricted funds and what the Constitution says and what we have restricted funds, it made a lot of sense to say, maybe we can make a pie chart and have Linda, as part of her communications, write up some sort of a, and I don't know how long that report would be or where it would be that you could put it out there, that the citizens could see where the money comes from, how much is from sales tax, how much is from property taxes, because people don't understand that property taxes on residences do not pay the bill. We have a lot of other funds that pay a lot of the things in the city that come from sales tax, come from commercial properties. And I think that that understanding is not, you know, I come all the time, so I understand where you are. But I don't think that an ordinary person just walking by would understand what's restricted and what's not. I don't think people understand the restrictions on what you can do in the park across the street and where you can put things because there are rules on part of it. I don't think they understand that the walking trail down on the west side of Highway 89 from the post office is not really city property. We manage it, but it's not ours. That state had some restrictions on it. You can only make a park out of it. And so we have other areas that have those restrictions, the golf course. And I liked when somebody, I guess it was Lisa, was saying she saw how brown our golf course was. One of the comments that I heard was, well, we wouldn't have a water shortage if they just took away and got rid of the golf course. I don't think people understand that the golf course now is required to basically pay for itself. And I think those are some communications that you as a city council and the city staff could create some sort of a short, maybe two-page expose that hopefully people would read, that they would look at it and say, oh, I understand now. I'm sure that most people say, yeah, they wouldn't read it anyway. But I think it would be a good step to do some of that to make it transparent that you guys are not making money off of this annexation. The city is really losing money on it. And what pays for it is in the county when they were there, the refineries and some of the others paid for all their services that they didn't pay for. And I know that our businesses and our refineries and those do pay a lot of it. And I think that it would be important for you to somehow put that out there in writing that people can, you know, document it so that people can see it, whether they accept it or not, that's something else. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee.
Thanks, Dee.
Just a quick question, Ken. Does our software allow more detail on the water bill? Or?
I don't know. We'll have to look at that and see. Okay. Off the top of my head, it might. Yeah. We probably can. I think that's a good idea, by the way.
Okay. Oh. Hold on one moment. Well, okay. Let the record show that maybe our software can. Yeah.
I'm in Salt Lake, and I have a whole question about the water thing. My water bill comes from the South Davis Water District. It indicates how many gallons I'm using, and if I'm above 10,000 gallons and the rate goes up, what is he talking about?
Joel, in our area, it's all South Davis. You don't have city water in that area, and we don't ever plan on it.
So
Well, he's talking about the rest of a lot of the residents in North Salt Lake use
are
city.
Not with South Lake.
They're with North Salt Lake Water.
Yeah. Okay. Next item is public hearing.
There's one more comment.
RM7. A year earlier, he was very adamant and vocal opposing this option, and he was very vocal and said, no, we don't want this, but now he does. I don't know what he has. Which brings me to what he has in mind for this area. Mr. Blundell hasn't been the best caregiver of this area. To turn him over to having somebody take over, if he's doing it himself, I once heard the mayor of North Salt Lake call Foxmore Leathers the armpit of North Salt Lake. If that's the armpit, this is much worse than Blundell's property. The backyard, the front, it is just rat infested. He's not a very good caretaker, which leaves a lot of us residents why we're so opposed of allowing him to turn this into the RM7. I just feel like he's going to do things I don't know what he's going to do. And that was one of my points about the commission meeting last week, is that last week we did not cover what his plans were. That was not in the discussion. It was just, he wants to make a change. Okay, let's give it to him. That's what I was left with. I don't know what the commission was given, but I do know from what I heard at the meeting, it was like, okay, sir, you want to make change? Okay, don't tell us what it is, whatever. I also had no comment about what the North Salt Lake's plan, longer-term plans for this area is. As I walk through the area in my neighborhood, I see homes that are about 15 feet high on average. Maybe there's an 18, but now this new zoning for both the R7 as well as the RM7 is 35 feet. The homes of Sycamore Grove tower over our area. There are homes that are just, the homes approach Sycamore Grove. If I lived there, I couldn't do what I want to do with my property. I'm planning to become a beekeeper. The morning sun is vital to wake up your bees. I can't do that. I could not do that if I had a 35-foot edifice 10 feet away from my backyard, like what Sycamore Grove is. They're up 10 feet around all the houses around the edge. I think more planning and consideration needs to be made for this area so that we can make a plan. I think North Salt Lake has the power to enforce parking in this area. Where I live in the R17 area, and when it comes to parking my car off of the street, I'm required to do this. Whereas I don't see that the HOAs have the ability to make changes like I do. My next door neighbor just put in a larger driveway so she can support the cars. Now, if you live in an HOA, it's an act of Congress to change your property so that you can have another driveway or whatever on your property. I don't think that the RM7 is a good recommendation. I want to remind you it was settled 4-3 because I think they need to talk about it more. And I could go on longer, and I'm sorry, I feel like I've gone on too long. I've got a lot more other points I'd like to make about this issue. That I think you do have the power to control parking, but I don't think that making it an RM7 would allow you that. It turned into an HOA, and then the stuff like Sycamore Grove, where they can't expand their parking, they're stuck. And safety is a big key, and having some more homes in this area is just going to make it difficult.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't catch your name at the start.
Don't call.
Thomas? Okay, thank you, Thomas.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Any other public? We'll move on. Next item is a public hearing and consideration of Resolution 2023-09R, a resolution adopting an amendment to adjust the 2022-2023 fiscal year budget. And Heidi?
Good evening.
And you've got a mic now, or you can come up.
Again, overall, because you have that money coming in for that debt service and available, it ends ends up being a net positive cash balance to the city. So this is the detail of the budget amendment. We can go line by line. I will point out maybe in different chunks anything that's important here. We already discussed an impact to the general fund of $64,800 in new revenue. In the debt service fund, you can see the $16,692,000 in bond proceeds. That bond proceeds is going to increase projected interest earnings by $360,000. That's just us sitting on that funding while we're getting the project started. Transfers from park capital. So this is going to be transfers of our impact fee reserves that we discussed when we talked about how we're going to actually fund the principal and interest payments on this debt. So we're transferring $700,000 of existing impact fee reserves out of the park capital fund into the debt service fund so that we can make those payments. The next two line items is $745,000 and $392,000. That's our principal and interest payment that will be due by June 30th. That's $1,137,791. The balance of the funding to make that payment will potentially be coming from our redevelopment agency funds. We are working with LYRB on coming up with some ideas and plans on transferring those funds and some new resolutions to be approved by the redevelopment agency to use the funds as allowed by statute outside of the project area, which would be for the Hatch Park, which is kind of nestled right in the middle of two projects and benefits them both. Fees of $91,401. This is just the cost of issuance of the bonds. And then a transfer from park capital. What that actually is spending down the construction, so spending about $1 million in the project before the end of the year, but transferring that into the park capital fund, which is the fund that is recognizing the total cost of the project. So moving money out of that escrow account and then into the construction account. In the capital improvement fund, Fund 40, recognizing an additional $102,000 on projected interest income, and then a transfer to that parks fund to cover the two trails projects that were approved at the November budget opening. At this point in time, we hadn't issued the debt service yet, so that could have been funded either by existing impact fee reserves. We're now using that since we've approved the Hatch Park debt to cover that debt. And so it necessitates pulling some funds from our capital improvement fund and moving into the park fund for those two trails. As a reminder, those are the Foxborough Park Trail and the Legacy Park Trail, and they total $590,278. In the park development fund, $470,000 decrease in impact fee revenue. So where we initially budgeted $557,000 in revenue, we're anticipating collecting $87,000 by June 30th, with the balance then coming in the next fiscal year. The transfer in that we discussed above of that $1 million, and that's to go towards the construction at Hatch Park. The transfer in of the $592,78 to go towards those two trails projects. And then last, a transfer out of impact fees to go back into the debt service to make the payment, because the debt service gets paid out of Fund 32, but the restricted funds are sitting in Fund 41. In the roadway development fund, or our streets fund, decrease in impact fees, original budgeted revenues were $461,600. We're anticipating a decrease of $400,000, so collecting only $61,600. Increase in interest earnings on our unrestricted balances of $66,000, and an increase in interest on our restricted cash balances of $48,000. So there's two types of revenues that are sitting in here, our restricted funds from C roads and impact fees, and then our transportation tax funds. The balance of the projects that are underneath those interest are the capital projects that were discussed at the last city council meeting. There's, let's see, six projects here totaling $2,560,000. These mirror what was presented to the city council and are based on our city engineer's estimates. In the water fund, impact fee revenue decreases of $989,400. Originally budgeted revenue was closer to $1.1 million. We're expecting it to be $157,600 based on that 21 new building permits. An increase in interest earnings of $54,000. Then we have five projects that were presented at the last city council meeting, all identified as new projects for fiscal year 2023 capital plan. Those total $1,870,000. And then you can see the last five items are reductions of remaining budgets. This is releasing funds for funds that are either projects that are either going to come in under budget, be rescheduled to a future year, or just looked at entirely differently as our you go through the budget process in for 2024. And then last, in the stormwater fund, original impact fee revenues were budgeted at $120,400. They're expected to come in closer to $28,400. Two new projects were proposed by the city engineer and presented at the last city council meeting totaling $630,000. And then releasing or rescheduling $510,000 of existing programmed funds. So again, a total change for all funds is a positive because of that new funding available for Hatch Park of $10,370,385. Were there any questions?
That's a lot.
Thank you for letting me go line by line and organizing it into two different, here's the reasons why, here's by fund. I think that's really helpful to give us some good context because this is one of our bigger budget amendments and I don't anticipate that we will be making this kind of budget amendment, making large capital requests very frequently, but with some staffing turnover, we did not have any capital projects funded for fiscal year 2023, so we worked hard to come up with this plan.
Thank you.
Any questions to Heidi? I'll open a public hearing this time. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to address the council about this
amendment?
Budget amendment. Come forward, Dee.
Dee Lawson, I just have a question. I thought that they replaced the water line on 250 last year. Did they not replace that line at 250? Because I noticed there's a line up there that says it's rescheduled for 2026 for 250 and 300. And I thought 250 was already done.
So yeah, that's the residual for 300 North. Rather than holding the funds for 3 years until we do the second half that were originally budgeted together, we're releasing them back. Well, then we'll request the funding for 300 North in 2026.
But I thought 250 was already completed and that money had already been put back.
So the money doesn't get put back until we release it or the fiscal year rolls over. So it's still sitting in that holding account on paper.
Thank you. Any other comments? I will now close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, but I'll go ahead and make the motion. I move that we adopt the amended, got it here in front of me now.
It's number four.
Number four. Okay. I move that we adopt the adjustment 22-23 fiscal year budget. Well, the total fund budget adjustment looks like an increase of $10,370,385.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Let me let the record show it was resolution 2023-09R. Let's do it by roll call. Ted?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is Sherry Pace is up. Consideration of ordinance 2023-03, an ordinance adopting a zoning map amendment for a Val Verde area located approximately between Highway 89 and Orchard Drive and 3500 South to 4100 South.
So R1 and R2 in the county both had a minimum lot size of 9,000 square feet. R1 allows single family dwellings, R2 allows two family dwellings or duplexes. R3 is their multifamily zone at approximately 18 units per acre is about what their density is in their R3. There's some debate over that. I'm not quite sure I understand their code, but needless to say, the developments that are in the R3 were developed at about 13 units per acre, so they didn't exercise the full amount that they could have, in my opinion. But this is the proposal. So last October, the Planning Commission met as we were going through the annexation process, and we had some discussions because we weren't sure if we needed to get the zoning in place before the annexation went through or as part of the annexation. We consulted with the city attorney, and he felt like that because this area was mostly developed, that we didn't really weren't in a rush to get that done. But what the Planning Commission did discuss was, let's take a look at what zoning can we propose for this area that will ensure that those residents maintain their current property rights, and if we have to give them more or less property rights than they already have, we'd like to lean to the side where we give them a little more property rights than rather than a little less property rights. And so the Planning Commission directed staff to take the R1 and the R2 zones and propose that they be designated in our R17 zone, that the multifamily R3 properties be zoned RM7, and that the C2 zone, their commercial zone along Highway 89, become our highway commercial zone, or our CH zone. So this is the map that you have before you with those designations. The Planning Commission did hold a public hearing on January 24th. That was their first public hearing where they received comments on this map. So a few things came out of that public hearing. The first, and I'll go over these in more detail later, just to give you a basic rundown. One of the things that came out from those public hearings related to lot sizes and duplexes. So in the county, a 9,000 square foot lot could have a single family dwelling or it could have a duplex on it. In our R17 and our RM7 zone, it's 7,000 square feet for a single family dwelling and 10,000 square feet for a duplex. So you have to have 3,000 square more feet.
In which zone was that?
In the RM7 and the R17.
Okay.
But if you had a single-family home on an R17, you could have an accessory dwelling unit, which in essence is a duplex, an owner-occupied duplex, on 7,000 square feet without any difference between the 7 and 10,000. So the Planning Commission did ask me to go ahead and advertise a public hearing for that change, along with a couple other that I'm going to discuss with you. We did have a one clerical error in the noticing, and so we're going to redo that portion of that and bring that to you in 2 weeks. But they did want to make that consistent so that a duplex could be built on 7,000 square feet, just the same as a single family. And that would give equal rights, property rights to these residents, or a little bit more than they have.
Chair, you said on a 7,000, or you're talking a 10,000?
7,000.
So they could put a duplex on a 7,000 square foot lot?
Yes. So that will be in 2 weeks. We'll cover.
Oh, that's in 2 weeks. That's not on the one tonight.
So, but I didn't want you to get confused if you heard about any of the planning commission or read the minutes. That's the reason that didn't come forward. But the second item that was raised of concern had to do with the people who had single family lots that would be adjacent or are adjacent to the county commercial zoning and would be adjacent to our C8 zoning. So the difference between our highway commercial zoning and the county C2 zoning relates to height and setback. So the setback required in the county, the rear setback, is 10 feet and it's a maximum height of 30 feet. In our CH zone, we have a zero setback on the rear and we have a maximum height of 60 feet. So there was some concern from those residents who have single family dwellings that would back up to the CH zone that they might have 60 foot commercial structures adjacent to their property line. Obviously the planning commission was concerned about that and asked staff to go back and review that. So we went and did that, and I'm gonna go over that in another slide because I have a better diagram here in a second. And the third thing that came out was that a property owner named Mr. Brent Blundell, he is adjacent to Sycamore Grove, and I believe that's what you have some of the comments that were made in the public comment section. He made a comment that he would like to have his property considered for RM7 instead of R17 because he's adjacent to Sycamore Grove. And so I have two different maps for you as we go through this. This would be what it would look like with his property zoned RM7, and the one before would be your Exhibit A without it being zoned RM7. So those are the two choices that I've provided for you. So as we went through this request on the RM7 zone for Mr. Blundell's property, I did some analysis on it, and the way that our code is written in the R17 and the RM7, the density that is allowed in those zones are basically 8 dwelling units per net acre. So what that means is if they have to build a private road back in there, we first take the area that the private road and the sidewalk, any public infrastructure or essential infrastructure, let's say, has to be deducted from the total amount of acreage. And then we calculate the density that's allowed based on what's left. So it's essentially they don't get credit for density for property that's in a road, even if it's a private road. You don't get it for a public road, you don't get it for a private road. So I calculated on his property that I think he would be entitled to approximately 6 dwelling units. The difference between the RM7 and the R17 zone for those 6 dwelling units would be what type of building could be built. So in the R17, he could build 3 duplexes. In the RM7, he could build 1 apartment building with 6 units in it. He could build 2 buildings each with 3 units in it, or he could build 3 buildings with 2 units in them. But there would still be a total of 6 dwelling units. That would be the maximum density. So I wanted to make sure that you understood that the density is the same in the RM7 as it is in the R17. It's just the type of structure that can be built.
Sorry about that. Are the setbacks and stuff the same, the height and the setbacks?
The height is the same. 35 feet is the maximum height in both of those zones.
Okay, and can I ask a quick question I should have asked 5 minutes ago? Our R17, does that mean 7 units per acre?
No, it's actually 8 dwelling units per net acre.
So that's what we're going to be zoning this if we choose to, R17, which is 8 per acre.
So basically, if you did single family lots, they would need to be 7,000 square feet each in size. That's what the 7 stands for.
Okay, that makes sense. And then RM7?
Also, if you were going to do a single family lot in the RM7, 7,000 square feet.
But what about
does RM allow multifamily when R1 doesn't?
Yes. So R17 allows allows single family dwellings, and it allows two family dwellings. Two family dwellings meaning a duplex. In the RN7, you can have both of those two uses, but now you can have a third land use type would be, you could have six townhomes attached together in one space.
Okay.
Or you could have stacked apartments that were walk-ups.
So the M doesn't mean that they can fit more units in. It just means they can fit different units in.
Exactly. So it's just a different kind of, what kind of building can be built there.
Thank you.
Having a tiny bit of a mental issue absorbing that. So with the R17, 7,000 square feet, how many, you tell me, how many units could they get under a hypothetical R17?
Six. And it depends on the configuration. So if they wanted to do
right.
six single family lots that were 7,000 square feet,
yeah.
and they could build a road that was
right.
that's longer than 150 feet.
No, I gotcha.
I mean, there's just so many different
right. areas. And then under the hypothetical RM7, still six.
Yes, still six units.
Uh-huh.
I've got a question. I know along 850, there's a fourplex along there. Does this make that fourplex non-conforming at this point? Okay. They just couldn't add on to it, or could they do a major remodel on it?
They could do a remodel, yes.
Okay.
They're still preserved, those rights.
So the duplexes that are along 850 and stuff are wouldn't be considered non-conforming unless the lot's too small, then I assume then that still kind of puts them in that same realm.
So in the R17 zone, we have several, well, quite a few, numerous duplexes in what will be the R17 zone. And there are only four lots that are less than 7,000 square feet. Now those four lots would have been less than 7,000, they're less than 9,000 square feet in the county. So they were already non-conforming in the county, but they can still continue because
sure.
they were legal non-conforming.
Okay, thank you.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basis is on the RM7 portion of this. And do you want me to go over the setbacks for the C8 zone or handle that on the next agenda? Because I have that in the next agenda.
I have a couple.
Let's do it on the next.
I have a couple questions about this part right here. Can I ask those
yes.
right now? So let me see if I'm understanding some of the questions that I have. So in the R17 house that currently has like a basement apartment, that will be allowed?
Yes.
Great. And then when deciding between, particularly for the Blundell property, the RM7 and the R17, the density is the same.
Yes.
But what is different is the parking. Well, the configuration of the house, the building is different as well. But my question is, under which of those two zones would we be allowed to have oversight over parking? There's been some concern that the parking's not well managed.
Okay. So in the R17, if somebody came in and wanted to build a duplex, they need to have two parking spaces for each of the two units. And of those two, there'll be four parking spaces, right, for a duplex. Two of them have to be covered. So one covered space for each of the two units. If you're in the RM7 zone and you build a building that has four or more dwelling units in the building, then the code requires an extra guest parking space. So for every four dwelling units, there's one whole guest parking space. So it's basically 2.25 spaces for each unit.
Okay, let me drill down a little bit on that. So could either of those zones use on-street parking to address their parking requirement?
No.
So both options require off-street parking at the rate of at least 2 parking units per unit, regardless. And currently, do you know if there is any off-street parking for the dwellings that are there?
For,
Mr. Blundell?
Mr. Blundell's property, sorry.
Oh, he just has a single-family home on that.
Oh, okay. Okay, so this is potential multi- or family use in the future. Okay.
And he hasn't made a specific development proposal and hasn't even discussed a specific development proposal with staff or with the planning commission. He's just looking for the same rights that he feels like that Sycamore Grove got. Now, just as a review for Sycamore Grove was a twin home development that was approved as a PUD in the county by Davis County, and we annexed it after that. The homes were built by, under permits from North Salt Lake because we annexed it, and then people came in and the builder came in and got building permits from us, and so we were the oversight on the actual construction of them. But if I looked at Sycamore Grove today under the RM7 zoning, my calculations based upon the road that had to be built and taking that out and then looking at the net density, there would have only been 16 duplexes or 16 units in there instead of the 18 that they got.
Thank you.
And that's because of the county zoning.
Yeah, we took it as the county had it approved. So basically it came grandfathered in. And when it came in, we felt like the RM7 matched what had been entitled by the county best. That was the planning commission's opinion at that time. And they made that recommendation to the council and the city council. So on Mr. Lundell's property request, the planning commission, I just wanted to let you know that it was unanimous to recommend this map to you, and it was a vote of 4-3 to change this map to allow Mr. Blundell to have RM7 as a recommendation to the city council. So,
can I ask a nitpicky drill down question? So, a PUD, does a PUD need to abide by the housing types in the rest of the table?
So, they have to abide by the housing types and they have to abide by the density. The only thing that changes in a PUD is maybe the layout. So let's say
right.
They wanted to do it as twin homes with an HOA, so the HOA owned all the yard spaces
right.
And the roads and the driveways. They could just own the footprints of the units, which is essentially what Sycamore Grove
is. What is multifamily and what is not? Is a townhouse multifamily? If there are 3 units in a building,
yes.
What is that?
That's multifamily.
Okay.
By definition under planning, I'm not going to get into building code.
May I ask one question? Because there's one thing I'm not understanding. The proposed North Salt Lake, the grid that you've provided to us, says the minimum lot size is 8 dwelling units net acre. But you're telling me RM7 allows for 6.
It's not a full acre.
He doesn't own a full acre. I was just showing the calculation on his property, and he has about 0.89 acres.
Okay.
And so I calculated a 26-foot road back to the end of the property with a hammerhead turnaround, figured out how many square footage what the square footage of that would be, subtracted it out of the total square footage of his lot, and then calculated what I would project the density would be based on that. So it could change if they built a shorter road and group the buildings together, but that's just my best estimate
okay.
Right now.
So are you through your presentation, or should we hold off on opining?
I have a question before we opine. So when we're talking about county zoning, does the county have different height restrictions for residential units than the city does?
Their restriction was 30 feet and ours is 35.
Okay, so that's the only difference is the 5 feet.
Yes.
And then are the setbacks the same with the county zoning?
They're very similar. They actually have smaller side yard setbacks. We have the 8 and 12, and I believe that theirs is just 8 and 8.
Okay, thanks.
And I'm just I do remember looking at it and it was a little bit smaller.
One other question. Is it when one approves a zoning change, is what the potential use will be a criteria that normally the Planning Commission would consider?
Well, they have to consider all the potential uses that it could be if it's just a zoning change without a specific development proposal.
Okay.
Yeah, and I did actually speak with Councilmember Porter earlier, and he was suggesting that the council also would have the possibility of not approving the RM7 for Mr. Blundell, but telling him that he could reapply at a later date mm-hmm. when he came forward with a specific development proposal.
Yeah.
Or whoever he intends to sell it to came forward with that. That could be considered. But those are just your options.
I have another question.
The best option.
This one property that's yellow at the back of the Sycamore Grove development, is there anything materially different about the R110 that is existing, and then now what will be surrounding that, which is R17?
So the R110 minimum lot sizes are 10,000 square feet, and duplexes are not allowed.
Okay.
That which is the reason the Planning Commission wanted to recommend the R17 instead of R110, because they wanted to give outside of the property rights to give them a little more property rights to allow them to have duplexes, because there are
yeah. Yeah, and my real question is, I wonder if having that one little house or one little property that is in the R110 there on Sycamore Lane, if that is valuable or if it just gets wrapped up into the neighborhood.
So the Planning Commission did have some discussion that they would probably like to revisit those properties that are on that side of Orchard Drive, on Elm Avenue, and then the three properties that are on Sycamore Lane, and possibly rezone those all to R17 to make it consistent. I think when those properties were annexed in, R110 was the default single family zone, and that was probably why it was chosen, because there was so much around it. But they didn't want to do that at this time because it didn't have anything to do with the annexation, and they thought it would be better to contact those property owners and let them contours.
It seems to me that the task at hand is not planning right now, but crosswalking. We are doing a basic translation of Davis County zoning to the closest corollary with North Salt Lake zoning. So it doesn't seem to me to be the right time to look at substantive changes. Right, and so that's my issue with the Blundell property and having that be considered as RM7, is that that becomes the only exception to a crosswalking activity. In other words, it's like Stan's logic. You know, it's not that we would never consider a change to that, but this is not the time to do that. That this is the time to do a crosswalk. That's my sense of it. Now, I could debate the pros and cons substantively of having that piece of land to be R17 or RM7, both sides. But if, you know, I'll go ahead and argue for the R17 side right now, which is that if the density is the same, then why wouldn't we want formats that lend themselves to home ownership. So there's that.
I do want to just add that there was significant public comment that was received. We got some letters. Those were included in the packet, as well as at the meeting. The general feelings from the persons that appeared at the meeting was that they'd like to maintain the single-family feeling of the neighborhood, even though there is considerable multifamily developments with duplexes in that area.
Can I ask a question about that? I read those comments, and I read the public comments from the Planning Commission meeting as well. And one of the chief concerns seems to be parking.
Yes.
Is there anything about either zoning that would create an immediate opportunity to address that? As soon as this is designated as one or the other, are there parking violations that are happening according to our current zoning that you know of?
Are there violations on the property according to
parking violations.
Oh, there's not parking violations on that.
Okay, so instrumentally, neither of these are going to change the parking situation right now. Okay, great. That's what I want. That's what
that
I was wondering.
The concern about it being rezoned to RM7 was the width of 850 West, on-street parking, lack of sidewalks, and street lights. Now, I will just mention this. The question was raised, and I believe it was raised by Mr. Paul, that when, because this area hasn't been in our city, it hasn't been contained within our general plan, and he wanted to know what the plans were for that. And so I explained to him as we start our general plan update this summer, hopefully, that we would definitely be creating a section of our code or our general plan for this area where we would look at what are the things in this area that they need. Do they need sidewalks? Do they need streetlights? And then getting public feedback. Do you want sidewalks? Do you want the streetlights? Because that seemed to be like some of the people in the neighborhood are saying it's unsafe because we have too much street parking and we don't have any sidewalks and we don't have streetlights. But then we've had other comments from the public saying we absolutely do not want sidewalks added to our area. We want it to stay exactly the same. So I think those are some of the public process that we have to get through when we do the general plan to figure out if anything should change.
You ready to go forward?
Okay, are we ready?
I think we're ready, and I think the only comment I wanted to make.
I already started the round of
No, the only thing I wanted to bring up is I don't see any advantage at all to the city at this point rezoning Mr. Blundell's property because we don't know what he's going to do there. And again, going along with what Ted said, there wouldn't be any advantage at all to the city. It'd just be giving him an advantage. It might be, I mean, I'm sure the Planning Commission passed it on to us because they think, well, he's next to this other zone and maybe it'd be fairer to him. But I think at this point, I don't see any reason to rezone that area. If he comes back and he or whoever buys the property comes back and says, this is what they're going to do, and they can show an advantage to the city by either making them non-rental units like we've done in other areas or some other type of advantage, then, you know, again, it'd go through the same process, public hearing, and people could decide which way they wanted to go. But at this point, I don't think there's a decision to be made on rezoning that area until we know what might happen in that area.
I also wanted to add that I think the crosswalk is necessary immediately, but I think I would want to see no rezones proposed in this area until we have a new council elected, because the people there have not been able to vote on us. And so I think if we wait until January 1st, we'll have a new council elected, a majority of the new council, I mean, a majority of the council is up for re-election. And then the other thing is, I don't think we should do any rezones or any PLOTs or anything until we get the name change situation fixed.
Addresses.
And I want to say,
I don't think that they care much either way about the addresses.
I agree with you. No. I have to say, I'm probably in the minority.
That was for you, Joelle.
I think we should change them. I think we should have changed them 40 years ago. But that's something we need to decide before we start assigning new addresses.
Well, I think we've told everybody that when we made our motion that we weren't going to change anybody's address until next year.
Yeah, and that's a good decision with the new council.
I don't know if anybody disagrees with me, but that's the way we made the motion.
That we were not even going to deliberate which way we might go until next year.
Sorry, I just deliberated.
I want to just point out, I received a letter from Kurt Stratton, but he's also reached out to everyone else. So, but I told him I'd bring up he's against this. And I also just want to say, you know, if I've had my 140 years on the council here, if I can look back and go, boy, if I could do it over again, parking, we'd never have enough parking. And I know we're trying to get away from cars and all that, but we just always need more parking.
Can I do a quick counterpoint?
Yeah, I knew Ted.
I agree with Ted.
Well, if you've ever been a household with one car and two kids and a wife, I have. Have you ever had your mom live in an apartment and have one car? I have. Should we be forcing people that have fewer cars to pay to store cars they don't have? Is that really a fair thing to do, especially in a time where we have an affordability challenge? So
I just look at results. You know, we have an area in Foxborough, and they're always reaching out going, there's cars parked in front of my house all the time, mm-hmm. from the big homes or, you know, mm-hmm. and we're like, yeah.
Which is totally allowed, right? Park in front of people's houses, it's allowed.
Yeah, but when you come home and
that's
you
not a parking problem, that's a parking solution.
Yeah. Not if you live there and want to park in front of your house.
But it's also a problem because that HOA doesn't allow on-street parking on those same streets in their HOA that are the same width as the streets in the public that are adjacent.
Yeah. But, anyway.
Well, I can just say where I live, and I live in right next to this property, and when we came to the vote on the conceptual of the thing, I didn't vote for it simply because the county passed it on to us with absolutely no visitor parking. Now, since that time, the HOA has made several parking stalls on the street and has somewhat solved the problem. But, yeah, just I don't know what the county was thinking, but they didn't require any visitor parking at all in this whole area. So,
are we ready to make a motion? Dan?
Okay, so we just need to approve the map that we see before us, right?
So in the motion to approve the ordinance, if that's the vote, I would just ask you to either approve it with Exhibit A or Exhibit B as the map. Exhibit B is the one with Mr. Flundell's request. Exhibit B is the one.
Okay. All right, I make a motion that we adopt ordinance 2023-03R, an ordinance amending the City of North Salt Lake zoning map, adopting zoning for Val Verde annexation area located generally between 3500 South and 4100 South, and Highway 89 Orchard Drive within the City of North Salt Lake, using the Map A without any additional zone changes.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
In the suggested motion, possible motions, there were four findings that were listed. Do we need to include those in the motion? Or can we say?
That's a good idea.
Okay. What were the findings? Are they listed here?
I'll do them.
Can we just say with the four findings?
Yeah. Incorporate the four.
Know what they are.
I'll read them here.
They should know what they are.
With these following findings, the proposed amendment is in accord with the comprehensive general plan goals and policies of the city. Two, changed or changing conditions make the proposed amendments reasonably necessary to carry out the, quote, purposes stated in this title. Three, the proposed zoning for the area is similar in character of the neighborhood development pattern. And four, the proposed zoning for the area will provide the property owners with zoning that is equal to or greater than the rights and uses enjoyed under the previous county zoning prior to annexation.
Okay. Can I just discuss one of those things? I still agree with this. This is great. But neighbors need to know that when we say we're giving you a little more leeway because the county was different, that might mean that your neighbor doesn't like it. And so I still agree we should do this, but everyone needs to know that's what that means and that we're okay with that.
Well, I can make a comment too, Mayor.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems that, you know, especially haven't been involved any of this zoning or zoning changes or anything, becomes a problem because we're very restricted. We don't have power to wave our hands and just change everything. people have bought their property. They have a constitutional right to use their property as it has been assigned to them. So when somebody buys a piece of property, they expect, and they should expect, under the Constitution, they have a right to do with how that property was zoned. Now, eventually, we could, over a process of time, possibly change some of that, but it takes a long process, and these property owners got to do it. We've got to do it in such a way that they don't feel they've lost any value in their property. So by keeping the zoning the same here, and some of it, I agree with a lot of the things that Jo Ellen put in her thing. This road's narrow and all those type of things. But unfortunately, that was zoned a long time ago to allow the duplexes on the street. We're not allowing additional zoning in that regard here, but we can't change that. And if we did, then if we had a whole bunch of money, I guess we could change it by buying their property or giving them money for the losses that they would sue us for. It's called a taking. So if you change somebody's zone so they can't do what they expected to do with their property, it's called a taking. And if it's a taking and it goes before the courts and the courts decide, yeah, you took away their rights that they were granted at the time that they bought their property, or then, you know, you've got to come up and pay them the difference. So just so you know that it's not we really don't have that kind of power. Another thing is that there's certain uses. I know it came up in one of the letters that I saw. There's certain uses the state's taken away our power on. One of those uses is, or care centers. Care centers, one long time ago, I discovered that a care center, a retirement home, whatever you want to call it, that right was taken away from us from the state. So if somebody wants to, if they have enough land, of course they have to have spacing and those kind of things, they want to put a care center in, we can't prevent that. That's
same with a charter school.
Yeah, and a charter school.
The charter school is even worse. I thought they might have changed that. I was hoping. We had a charter school going to our city that was totally against our planning commission, and the council thought it was the dumbest thing to put a charter school on top of a toxic waste dump across from a water treatment plant. And we told
them, Sheldon Kilpack.
What's that?
It's Sheldon Kilpack's charter school memorial bill.
And between two roads that'll probably be taken out by an earthquake. And we thought that was the dumbest place you could put a charter school, but the state had taken that right from us, and we didn't have any choice. It went in, and it's there, and
they don't use it anymore.
Down by the Ruskin.
No, the
school
water.
The school moved to Woods Cross.
Well, good. Sorry, I'm bringing up a.
It wasn't a great location.
No, they agreed with you. That's the point. They agreed with you.
Okay, good. Sorry, but that was one of those things that I felt really bad about, because we looked at it from a logical planning, everything else, and we didn't have any power. They put it in, and I didn't realize they moved. So what's going in there now?
GCI construction.
Okay. All right. Good enough. Sorry.
All right.
Shouldn't have brought it up.
No, you should have. But the market fixed that one.
Okay. Yeah. Good. People didn't like driving and smelling the water treatment plant across the street.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
But may I ask one question?
Please.
To clarify on that motion. The motion has the four findings. It makes reference to Exhibit A, which means we leave the zone as R17, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
All right.
Pardon?
For the Blundell.
For the Blundell property.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 That passes unanimously. Thank you. Next item is consideration of Ordinance 2023-04, an ordinance amending City Code Title 10, Chapter 25, amending the maximum building height and minimum rear setbacks for the CH zone.
Feet and a maximum height of 30 feet and two stories.
One of the things that the planning commission wanted to consider is that some of the CH zone is going to be incorporated within the town center form-based code. And those with that area is an area where we may want to allow additional height. And so there is a condition, there's an exception to the maximum height if you are within the town center master plan area. So that area that is scheduled to be changed to form-based code. And that conditional use permit would be based upon setback from the property line shared with a single family dwelling. So for instance, if you wanted to go to from 30 feet to 35 feet, the minimum setback would be 20 feet. If you wanted to have three stories and a maximum height of 45 feet, you would need to be set back from that property line 40 feet. If you wanted to go to the what we previously had in the CH zone, a full height of 60 feet, then you, and four stories, you would need to have a maximum, or a setback of 60 feet to get to the maximum height of 55 feet. That is mirrored as what we have drafted in the form-based code. And so the areas that we wanted to apply this to would be the areas that would begin within the town center master plan area, as well as any areas north of 1000 North. So if you think about the Key Bank building and the Jiffy Lube, those are the CH zones that are north of 1000 North, and the R&R barbecue, because those areas are not adjacent to any single family residential zones. And so that was the exception that the Planning Commission wanted me to put into the code. I have a little drawing. This is all drawn to scale. So this is just showing what a scaled home that's 35 feet tall, 10 feet away from their property line. I'm assuming that's a side property line instead of their rear property line, and maybe it's a rear property line for the CH zone. But it could be more than, it could be a greater setback if that was a rear setback to a home. But with a minimum 10 feet away, they could have a 30 foot high structure, and then this kind of shows you how it would step up in the height as they move further away from that property line that was shared with the single family home. This helps protect the neighborhood as a transition from our town center. And that was something that we already had planned for the area.
Caveman question.
Yes.
So is this consistent with the proposal? What I'm looking at is consistent with the proposal.
It's the exact language, exactly the same as is proposed in the form-based code.
Okay, and next question. Not as much caveman. I know that we haven't looked at the form-based code, but what I would want to avoid is going from now you can do this, and then in February we said you could do this, but now we want to have you consider doing this and rubber banding it. You follow me? You have a lot of height limit, now you have a lot less. Oh, but for various reasons, including better design, now we want to consider a height increase again, and doing that kind of thing, and then trying to have to explain this kind of policy gymnastics.
So I think what's happening here is we're saying that this is a better standard to be 30 feet and a minimum of 10 feet away from the rear property line in the CH zone. But if you would like to go taller, then it would be appropriate to set further back from those properties.
Yeah, and as you look ahead to the draft form-based code, though, is the form-based code, would you say, is very roughly in this vein of what we're looking at? Or
the language is exactly the
okay,
same.
Got it.
The setbacks for 20 feet to get to 35 feet, 40 feet to get to 45 feet, 60 feet to get to 55 feet is exactly as it's drafted.
Okay.
So the form-based code you're kind of indicating is only going to be in the town center?
Yes. So the CH zone that is south of 3800 South will all become town center.
What about some of the residential zones that we've kind of been talking about? Are they going to have a similar...
Everything that's in the annexation area is outside of the town center.
Okay. May make a suggestion that we consider a setback height thing for the same residential areas. I know when I moved into my town home, it had a very low backyard setback and the buildings are pretty high, and it does it does kind of take the privacy away from those single family homes. So I'm just wondering if that shouldn't be brought.
That definitely is, I think, something we should consider when somebody does a PUD, because essentially that's what Sycamore Grove was.
Right.
A PUD, which allowed them to reduce the setbacks from what would be standard.
Right.
And so I think that's something that we need to consider as a policy of when we're going to do
PUD
or PUD subdivisions, that we need to take that into consideration.
I would put that in some kind of policy statement then and have the Planning Commission approve it, because I do think that there should be a greater setback the higher the building is, regardless of where it's at. And I understand in a PUD we can do that. And if it's not under a PUD, then they've got to have standard setbacks anyway. So, just my suggestion.
PUDs are great because they give us some flexibility tools,
right,
but we also have to use those with great responsibility,
right,
because it doesn't mean that just because you get more flexibility that you should overbuild the development.
Right. And I think the county messed up on that one, and I live in that, so.
It's pretty though.
Oh yeah, I don't, nice. I don't mind it, but I do feel that there was an overreach there when the county approved those with so little setback.
I did too when I got mad at them when I saw that they were.
I know.
Do you remember that though?
It was a tough time.
Why didn't you come and tell us you were doing this?
Yep.
If you need someone to yell at the county, give me.
Currently in the zoning that we just approved, though, there is no structure that should be over 35 feet in near any of these residential areas, unless they're abutting just to the CH, right?
Right.
So the graduated amount is
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I think what she's saying is make the policy that if you approve a PUD, which would allow a change in setback,
sure. It
should be based on the height of the building. And because we kind of in the past just arbitrarily said 30, 35 feet was the tallest building you could have. But obviously, the PUD, you can change your setbacks. But when you change the setback, you got to lower the height of the building. That's all.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have a motion on this?
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I move that the council approve Ord 2023-04, adopting the proposed amendments to Title 10. I'm hoping I'm reading the correct one, related to the maximum height in the CH zone, with the findings in the staff report.
I'll second the motion.
Do you want me to read the findings?
Oh, if you feel compelled to do so.
All right, thank you. All right, we have a motion and second. Any further discussion?
I just want to say, Sherry, thank you. Good job. This is a hard thing, and you've done it very well.
Yeah. All right, let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-10R, a resolution expressing the city's support for Senate Bill 185, transportation amendments, including support for the creation of the State Active Transportation Investment Fund and other provisions of SB 185 that allow for the creation of statewide active transportation system and use of local option sales tax for certain transportation purposes. And I'm going to turn this over to Ken, and I know Ted's going to make a comment.
So this is on your agenda because the council asked for it to be on the agenda. We tried to create a resolution that would express the council's desire to support this proposed legislation. So that's about all I have. I'm kind of taking a guess that this is what you want to say. And certainly, if you want to amend it, we could.
I'll be brief. Utahns really, really want to be able to walk and bike safely in their community. And I think they do by survey. It's like 90%. Huge surveys surveys of 10,000 people. The biggest surveys in Utah we've done, statistically significant, and that, those are the results. So this is, I'll send you the results if you'd like. And we're doing a new one now. So anyway, Utahns want this. And the problem we've got is that we have really very little money, state money, that can go towards bike improvements. And this will help resolve that.
Any other comments?
I have a comment. I like this and I plan to vote in favor of it, but I would like to maybe discuss what we had brought up earlier, which is that we as a council support legislation only when we are unanimous. And I wonder if that applies here before we vote.
Polling vote?
I'll say sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. I'm ready to make a motion then.
No.
Can I ask Lisa a question? Does the league have a position on this bill?
I don't remember the bill tracking on this, but there is another bill, transportation bill.
I'll tell you soon.
That has a local option sales tax that could be given to mental health. Transportation funds will be put towards mental health and other health purposes. So they're playing fast and loose with the local option
Isn't
sales tax.
Salt Lake County's trying to do that. Yeah.
But it's kind of a slippery slope. But anyway, this one is a little different. They dedicated the local option sales tax for this transportation specifically to make it so that it's accessible in terms of bicycling and walking, that kind of stuff. But I don't know if it's going to interplay with the other one. I don't know what's going to happen there. It's limited to Salt Lake County. What do you think, Ken? What's the tracking on it?
On SB 185, uh-huh. The league is supportive.
Oh, they support. Okay.
This is the one on our agenda. Yeah.
Okay.
So how does this interact with the governor's inner?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Governor's statewide trails effort.
Yeah, I think this bill is the funding source for the governor's initiatives. So.
Okay, make a motion.
I'll make a motion that we adopt resolution 2023-10R, a resolution expressing the city's support for SB 185 transportation amendment, including support for the creation of the State Active Transportation Investment Fund and other provisions of SB 185 that allow the creation of the statewide active transportation system and the use of local option sales tax for certain transportation purposes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 So that passed unanimously, so we will support it.
So it's better than passing. It's passing unanimously.
Okay. We've approved city council minutes and action items, and we've had council reports. Next item would be city attorney report.
Not tonight, Mayor.
Thank you. Mayor report. I'm going to be brief because it's snowing outside still. I mentioned this earlier to Ken, but right now in the county there are 4 dispatch services for police, fire, and that is now going to 2. Davis County, Clearfield, and Layton City are combining their services. We will remain with Bountiful City and the, is it 5 cities in, that Bountiful uses there? And the county would still like to bring us on board, but at this time we don't do it. I'm going to skip that. Just one item. I'm just kind of planting a seed here and don't know if we even want to talk about it tonight, but the Liberty Fest is one of the great things that we do in our city. And this incorporates activities on usually the Saturday before the 4th. where we have a 5K race, we have a volleyball tournament, we have different activities. We're talking about having a breakfast, maybe even. Then the Eaglewood car show, which I'm guessing we might get 10,000 people to that thing at this point. And then, of course, our fireworks on the 3rd of July, where we get maybe 25 to 30,000 people. So right now we have Dan Checkitz, who oversees this, and David Franson and Linda, and, you know, they kind of run thing, and it's a big job. And Dave Checkitz and I are exploring possibilities of bringing on a major sponsor that would have naming rights to this and fund it, basically, so that we're not necessarily using city resources. Anyway, the idea came up, and you know, I always tell you my favorite scripture is, "For God so loved the world, he didn't send a committee." And we're getting ready, but I think we need a committee. This is a big job. And so I'm kind of throwing out the idea that maybe each council member thinks of someone that's really energized in the community that might participate on this Liberty Fest committee and help ease the... There's just a lot that goes on in it.
I think that's good thinking, Mayor.
Well, why don't you be giving it some thought and... Well, so we're giving some thought about who you might want to appoint.
So, and if you talk to anybody, these committee members have to be hard workers because it's hard work to put these events on. So they're going to have to come to the event, volunteer. Sorry, I didn't mean
there,
to interrupt
yeah.
you.
Yeah, well, what about we've already got our car show person, right?
Yeah, and they do a pretty good job of bringing people on.
Right. So he could be a committee member right off the bat, right?
And the other part of this that I guess I want the council to consider is, you know, so we're going to have a new clubhouse this year, and a big deck, and there are people, there are companies that are donating to it. Some $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, and so we've tried in the past to have a kind of a VIP section, and the council doesn't seem to get very involved with this. And I'm throwing out that like the council should be there with their fam.
We could be there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a little fuzzy last
year.
All
right, it wasn't clear.
So now that we know we're supposed to be in the VIP area with our families and our blankets and our chairs, well, then we will be there.
Awesome. Okay. I apologize for not communicating well.
We didn't. Then. Yeah.
But because this is, like I said, I think this is a big deal. And just on a, you know, like last year, we got hit with a price increase at the last minute on fireworks, so we cut 4 or 5 minutes. And, you know, everyone was very gracious. Oh, that was so great. That was the best ever. But it wasn't. And so I want to make it awesome, and I want to make it better every year.
Okay,
and,
but nobody except you noticed that it was 4 minutes
I know. Okay. Yeah, I'm timing it. Anyway, I appreciate your support. I think this is such a great event and let's make it better.
Are we going to have that same band again? The dance people?
I don't know.
They were amazing.
Yeah. So one of the thoughts that we've been thrown out.
Dance doctor. That's what it was called.
What, dance doctor.
Dance doctor.
So. There are communities. Okay, Stan. Sorry. There are communities that have events around, like Draper Days, is the between the 4th and the 24th or something. And Linda and I have gone down to that for several years, and they have some awesome bands that come in. And LeVar Christensen, I guess, is a groupie from way back or something. He knows all these. But they have...
Bruce Malone lives in Salt Lake. Let's have him come.
Yeah.
Park City.
Anyway, the difference is I look at like Draper. How does Draper pull this off? And they have some... It's a long-time established community, and they have very involved people volunteering. And at North Salt Lake, we're kind of a fragmented community. Foxborough's newer than Eaglewood and the old part of the city. You know, we don't seem to have that history like Bountiful has or Draper or, you know. So I'm just trying to create something that people want to get involved in, and it will become perpetual, if you will.
I have a suggestion. I like the idea of creating a committee for the event. It's a lot of work, and I think spreading that around to people would be helpful. I think it might be a good idea to open up volunteers for that committee in a citywide offer before we are asked as city council members to find someone. I think if we are asked to find someone, we're really only operating from our own personal networks.
Sure.
And that can leave out good portions of the city that might be ready to get involved, or a group of friends that all live next door to each other, but they don't happen to know all of us that might want to do that. So
okay.
I especially think this might be a great thing to put on Just Serve, so that anybody in the city who's interested in volunteering could offer that, and then we could go back and see what committee membership is there, and then maybe the council members need to start digging into our personal networks. But I think when I think about myself, I am limited to, you know, my own network in the city, and there are great people in that network, as there are with all of us, but that's not the whole city, and I wouldn't want to leave anybody out.
Great suggestion. Okay. That's all I had in my report. Ken?
I don't think I have anything. I was going to announce the golf course opening on April 1st. Other than that, I don't really have anything for the entire group.
Okay. We don't need a closed session tonight, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you, everyone. Everyone drive carefully, please. Slow down and get home safely.
Is it still snowing outside?
It's going to snow for another 24 hours.
But I mean, is it still going?
Yeah.
So. I can't see.
It's hey, thank you for the
very good meeting.
That was really cool.
Yeah, that was great.
Great. Thank you. I meant to say that in my report.
When we get later on, maybe you can have action towards inside of the building.
It would be nice to see that.
Sorry, I got carried away, Stan.
No, I just, at some point after they've radiated certain parts of your body, you just can't. No control.
Yeah.
Like that. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Years ago, and I don't know how long you've been here, but we used to have
27
years. So you remember when you used to have the state.